Today's show is brought to you by the Star City Murders, the new serial killer thriller now streaming on Tubi.
Yes, Axel, my film. We're on Tubi now. Directed by Giles Andrews, starring myself, Heath Sentazzo, Tim Russ, Michelle Lukes, Austin Highsmith Garces, among many other greats. We have a new home. Now, you can still get it on Amazon, Apple, Vudu to rent or buy, but now for free, you can stream on Tubi and actually, Axel, Sling TV as well.
Nice. We just did it the other day. It's super simple. If you don't see it on the home screen, just search Star City. It'll come right up. You'll be watching it for free. And Tubi, there's some ad breaks, but they did great ad breaks. It's like it was made for it. So stream it now. The Star City Murders, baby.
And press like that you liked it. It'll help. Thank you.
Welcome back, everyone, to Podcast Winterfell. What a great episode we have for you today for a fantastic season of House of the Dragon. We're talking House of the Dragon, Season 2, Episode 7, The Red Sewing. With me, of course, is Gina, our man Ando, who you've heard on many pods, including right now we're covering Mayor of Kingstown with Heath, is here as well. You can find out more about us at dvrpodcast.com. You can also become a patron at patreon.com/dvr. Heath and I just recently did 2 Patreon-exclusive TV check-ins, and hopefully we'll do more soon. Well, we should have recorded the conversation Gina and I just had about the Real Housewives of New Jersey. That would have been a nice Patreon exclusive, right, Gina?
It would have been. I know. We just kind of deep dived into the potential they're going to reboot the whole series and what that means and why we thought it was a good idea. But alas, we were not recording.
Nope. But now we get to talk about the Real Housewives of Westeros, or the House Dragons of Westeros, with Andy. Andy, how you doing? You're back.
Yes, I know it's been a long time since I've been on here, but I thought that we were talking about How to Train Your Dragon this week, not House of the Dragon. I might have my notes mixed up, but they confuse me so much after this. But I do also want to tell Solo when he hears this, I took the bullet for you, listening to the Housewives talk before we recorded, so he doesn't have to do it next week when he's here. So let's talk about this fun episode of TV.
Yeah, well, before we talked about the Housewives, and actually while you were fixing your mic, which now sounds great, we were talking a little bit about Gina and I, some reaction to this season. And I was just watching our friend Mike's video about this episode and reading some other, you know, you read and you listen to pods and whatnot. And there seems to be kind of a bit of negativity brewing that this episode and the episode before are kind of filler episodes. There's not a lot of action happening. It's not as interesting or exciting maybe as last season. And both Gina and I were disagreeing. I thought this episode was awesome. I kind of had to recalibrate myself when thinking about the amazing dragon action we saw like 3 or 4 episodes ago, that it comes back to that basic thing that we had with Game of Thrones, the spectacle versus the story. And the spectacle should serve the story. And if we don't have episodes where we're delving into characters, Harrenhal excluded perhaps, it the spectacle does not mean as much. So I don't know. Andy, how do you feel about that?
Well, I kind of wanted to talk about my whole, at least when we get started here, my whole thing with House of the Dragon, because last season I was really not that hot on the show, season 1. I didn't think it was that, I mean, I still watched it, but I mean, it didn't come close to my top 10. I didn't love it nearly as much as a lot of other people did. And I was like, it's kind of strange. Similar to how when you and Solo talked on that Patreon one, you guys talked about this a little bit, and he was like, he wasn't super hot on it. Not for the same reasons as I wasn't, but like in a lot of ways, the first season to me felt a lot like the Star Wars prequels. It sounded like Game of Thrones. It felt kind of like Game of Thrones, but it just didn't have the spark for me. It felt all, kept, like super dry, and I mean, and I know the book is written this way. I haven't read the book, but I know it's written kind of as a history as well, the book that this is based on. So, but it felt more like a history thing that I was watching that didn't really, it was like, it almost, the things I loved about Game of Thrones were character stuff and the subtle humor that they put in. And like the humor of, this is a ridiculous situation, even though it wasn't a comedy, there was a lot of humor in it. And none of that stuff seemed to be in season one for me, with the exception of Damon, Matt Smith, who I love Matt Smith. So I'll get into a little bit of that later. But, and even the first episode of this season, I felt the same way. I'm like, oh boy. And that was part of why I didn't commit to coming on the show right away. Cause I'm like, I'm not really enjoying this. I don't know if I want to talk about it, but as soon as season two hit or episode two hit and the fight with the twins, I've loved everything this season since then, including the last couple episodes. I've even liked, I know you guys have complained about it among many other people. I even love the side stuff with Damon and wandering around in this weirdness. It's one of the things I love about the Game of Thrones world is when it dives into that weird stuff that doesn't seem to fit sometimes. I loved all of it. I'm just fine with him wandering around in dreamland all season. It's not bothering me at all. The last two episodes I have loved because I want more of the character stuff. I want this. I mean, they're not perfect episodes, but I have loved where this season has gone. I've much more than season one. So I'm actually happy with this. So I hadn't seen much reaction to the last couple episodes. So when you were just saying that it's been a little all over the place, I was surprised because I thought the last two episodes have been extremely strong. So I don't know. I'm very curious to talk about this as a whole. So that's kind of my overall thoughts, I guess.
Nice. Ando bringing the positivity, Gina. I like it.
No, I like it too. And Andy, I feel the same way that you did about season one. It was not my favorite. I think it made my top 10, but it was not like, and I think the group overall like rated it the number one show. Mm-hmm. I was really disappointed because so many people are like, just like so gaga over it. Cause I was like, there were definitely good scenes. Like, I think there were a couple scenes in season one that we still haven't necessarily surpassed their greatness this season, but I just think this season is far more cohesive. I do like this introduction of new characters. I love the fact that bad accent Lady Missaria is actually like she's on my top 10 list for characters. Like, we finally get to see her playing a role other than just trying to talk like she's from 10 different places. And then I love the whole quest for the dragon riders, because it, and I think it's kind of a nice juxtaposition. They call it House of the Dragon. It's like, yeah, but you know, half of Rhaenyra's family has basically cast her out and usurped her throne and like some house. And so she's like, you know, it's kind of like when they say, you can build your own family. And like, it doesn't have to be blood, and you know, they don't have to be of legitimate birth in this case to make up a family and make
maybe
up
subconsciously
army.
That's part of why I love this season, because as you both know, my immediate family is not all blood. We have adopted children, and maybe it was speaking to me on some level I didn't even realize while I was watching it. Mm-hmm. So I think this season is really strong. And the other thing I said, there's humor in this season way more than season one. It was so serious in season one, and I think that's helping me with a lot of it too, why I'm enjoying it so much more.
All right.
And a lot of that was thanks to King Aegon, actually. Like, he became the Daemon of this season. Right. He was just so funny, and now it's just we're tragically watching him suffer in pain.
So painful.
Yeah, but no, there's a lot more kind of humor and kind of fun, I think, in this season, and little moments of triumph for the characters individually. So,
I agree with everything. I think I love this show. Last season was my number one. I had to be reminded. I misremembered that it was Interview with the Vampire, but I guess that was number three for me. And Interview with the Vampire season two is going to be in my top five. We never talk about it on the pods. I want to do a pod on that.
I still
show.
Need to watch that.
Do either of you
watch? I need
watch
to watch
that?
Season two. Okay. No, I've watched season one, and I thought season one of Interview with a Vampire, it exceeded my expectations so much better than the movie. And then for some reason, they have to take the Mayfair Witches and turn it into the crappiest thing I've seen.
I know that turn. See,
it's wild.
That's the problem with this whole kind of universe building is when something like that happens, where you have an amazing show, which should have, it was one of the best dramas on television, and it was kind of ignored. It kind of got pushed into that AMC Plus. Is it on AMC? Is it on Plus? And then they did the Mayfair and the Anne Rice universe. And then when season two came, I think it was just the interest was low. But let me tell you, it's just as good. It's fucking amazing. And if you had told me back in the day that no ball having motherfucker was such a good actor, I had no idea that he would come. You know who I'm talking about from Game of Thrones?
Yes. That's the link here.
Yes.
Grey Worm.
Grey Worm. He is an amazing actor.
He really is.
I mean,
he was wasted in Game of Thrones.
Wow. Yes. Yeah. Wasted. I was shocked. When I sit there now watching this show, and I think that dude is one of my favorite actors working right now. And I've only seen him in two things ever. He's just, you need to watch Interview with the Vampire. And it's like the best love stories on TV too. The guy who plays, the main vampire that was, what was Brad?
What's that?
Lestat, right.
Oh, Lestat was Tom Cruise, I think, wasn't he?
Oh, he was Tom Cruise. Okay. Well, this is really Lestat. The guy who plays Lestat, too. 30 years
since I read the book. I don't remember.
Yeah, what an amazing actor. Whenever they talk about him, they use his full name, Lestat de Pontiac or something like that. But anyway, I love it. That's a great show. But this show is great, too. And I have been very happy with this season, though I did have to recalibrate, because I do think that for myself, and I think it happens to people, we complain when there's too much spectacle and all, oh, it's all dragons or sex position or this or that. But then when they don't have it, we're like, we want more of it. Right? So I think it's good to just kind of have these episodes where it is political and character based. Like, I thought Allison's little journey in this episode was absolutely wonderful. And it was something that I've been looking for from that character since we first met her. I thought it was some of the most real, true moments that this character has had in the run of the series. And a lot of people said, oh, why? It was stupid. She went out camping and then she went in a lake. Now, I agree with Catfish. I was hoping for a little bit more nudity when she got into the lake.
It is weird if you go swimming out in the middle of nowhere and you swim with some clothes. I actually thought that was odd, but I don't know.
Even the white dress had a lot of cover. But then again, that's the actress's choice, right? We don't always need the nudity, but I thought it was funny that Catfish mentioned that.
Just for practical reasons, once you get out, then you got to walk back in wet clothes.
Yes.
True,
but it does make there's a nod to that. They have done a better job in this show, I think, than some of the sex position that they had in Game of Thrones, which never, never bothered me. Mm-hmm. I'm all about people being naked on TV. Like,
I didn't realize
naked.
I was on mute for a minute, but if we're going to talk about this, Allison's spa weekend, which is what I called it.
Love it.
I think the whole wearing of the dress in the lake is before she leaves. She's like, this whole place feels unclean. And, we've seen her in the bath a couple times just scrubbing away because she feels dirty. And so I could see there's the side of her, even though she's been getting with Sir Crispin Cole, that she's a big advocate for
the seven.
Seven. And
is it supposed to be like a baptism type of thing?
It's like a baptism.
Okay.
She's, wearing the gown because she's trying to get back to her.
Got it. That makes more sense.
That does make a lot of sense. Judy.
It'll be, I think the more interesting thing will be to see if kind of what happens when she returns.
Yes.
If she will return. Part of me is thinking, well, why don't they just really steer away from the books and have her either go to see her son that she hasn't seen in years, or just, you know, full on join team. Which I think is very far-fetched and would never happen because she'd be leaving all her children behind. But she doesn't really seem to like very much, except for maybe Helena.
No, that's true. I like that. That was a spot weekend. I like that. The robes did make me feel like the undergarment did make me feel like it was some sort of baptism. Do I think it's going to have some great effect on her? No. I think oftentimes, speaking of Real Housewives, remember that husband? Oh, no, that was that was the Vanderpump spinoff. Sorry. When one of the husbands went on an ayahuasca trip that he heard about on Joe Rogan, and he came back, and for exactly 24 hours, for like the Monday that he came back, he was like, I'm a different person. And then by Tuesday morning, he was like, you motherfuckers. Right? Like, this
doesn't
is
that guy play quarterback for the New York Jets now, actually? Yeah,
I think he does. But I think Allison is going to be much the same. Do I think that she's going to all of a sudden be like this character who comes back and takes her power or becomes a good mother or speaks truth to all these guys there? No, I don't think so. I think maybe you're right mentioning the seven. Maybe it's more of like a dedication to her fucking piety or some bullshit that she'll more so do. But still, I thought it was beautiful. I thought it was beautifully shot. I thought it was so interesting the way when her guard said, you know, when are we going back? She said, I may not go back. I felt like there was a freedom there with her. Maybe we'll never see it again, but for a moment it was there.
Well, and the most wild thing about her taking off like this, was anyone else even alerted? I think she just kind of snuck away because...
Do they care?
Well, I don't know. Like, I would think if it's, you know, kind of Aemond and or Laris, that they'd be like, it is not safe for you to leave the bounds of the castle.
Laris would just be like, wear shoes, wear good shoes.
You know.
Protect the feet.
I don't know that she even told anyone else that she was leaving. And I don't even know if they're gone, which is kind of a very interesting mash up against when Rhaenyra went to see Allison in the Sept, and everyone's like, where the F is she? They were freaking out, and here's Allison, like, just kind of slips away for her spa weekend.
And I thought the same thing. It
was any of the wiser.
Very reminiscent of that.
Yeah.
With which completely different thing. Reactions,
She's not missed. Her children don't miss her. The people on her the council don't seem to miss her, which is also very sad for that character, right? She doesn't really have anyone.
Yeah. But in many ways too, her own doing, right? I mean, I think,
That's why I have a hard time feeling sorry for her.
Yeah, true. I mean, I think there's, you know, there are a lot of, instances, and especially in her storyline of her sitting around with these men and them telling her, even her own son telling her to basically go back to the kitchen or what, you know what I'm saying? There's a lot of that. But in her too, there is a deficiency of character. And that is, you know, that shows the world is one way, but you are in it as well, right? Like, you have power as well. So what will happen? Who knows? But Ando, anything that you want to, our guest today, anything that you in particular you want to bring up from this episode that we can talk about?
I'm not sure what. I don't know where to go. I don't. why don't ask me again in a few minutes after we get going a little bit. I'm fine with just kind of jumping around.
Gina, anywhere you want to go?
I feel like we should go to Harrenhal.
Let's go. Let's journey to Harrenhal. to our, let's see, is there a young man in The Last of Us season 3? Because I think we found our equivalent. What a performance here by what's his name? Young, is he Oscar Elmo?
Oscar.
I can't remember.
Oscar Tully.
Oscar, yep. Young Oscar. What a performance. He really, because this was a sneak attack, right? This was a little bit different than our young actress before, where from the beginning she was raw, right? Mm-hmm. He was kind of, the first couple times we saw him, he was a little bumbling, but now that he's taken over, he stood up there. That was kind of fun.
Yeah, it was fun seeing, as much as I love Matt Smith and Damon, it was fun seeing him get basically steamrolled and didn't even know what to do. It was an impressive scene.
Yeah, no, I was inspired to write a little song to the tune of Billy Crystal when he used to sing, "It's time for Oscar, Oscar, Oscar." I only did like a verse, but it's like, "His name is Oscar, Oscar Tully, a trout, but he's more like a shark. He is Oscar, Oscar Tully. Shame Prince Damon to pay for his part."
I love it. I love it. Gina, that was wonderful. Thank you.
I think you just found a new theme song for Podcast Winterfell.
Yeah, I know.
I got to clip that
and run it in the beginning.
Yep.
We'll have Matt do some music for it.
Yeah, you can put some beats behind it. It'll be perfect.
Matt has to do, by the way, everyone should be listening to Matt's music analysis on Before the Dragon podcast. Go to mattsaudioblog.com. But Gina, that is something that Matt should do a special episode where he breaks down your song.
Oh, I love that.
No. Musical analysis.
I came up with that this morning. It's not, I was just thinking about I was listening to Bubba and Catfish when that song came to me, just because they were, you know, really talking about young Oscar. And I've seen a lot of like stories comparing him to Leanna Mormont.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, for sure.
You know, just kind of that young kid coming into their own. And I loved it. It was just like, he just really put Damon in his place. He didn't care that guy has a dragon. He didn't care. And then he's like, yeah, and you're going to serve up justice to your lackey. Like, go now. I was just like, off of his head. It was so good.
I think what I loved the most about it is it came out of nowhere. I mean, a lot like the Leanna thing, where nobody was expecting that to come, and it was so good, so dang good. Man, it was awesome.
We didn't get to see it, though. You know?
You know, they've been a lot more light on the violence and the blood season, which I kind of don't mind. I mean, especially if it means they're saving money for, like, dragon.
That's true. If somebody's head getting cut off costs this much money than it does to just have like an extra dragon in the background or something, I think that's true. Yeah. And we get the point, right? Though it was last season, there were some great beheadings, especially by Damon.
Yes.
When he took out the sea snake's brother, remember? Just kind of cut him right through the mouth.
Oh, that was crazy. That? His tongue.
Yes. That was amazing.
In his kind of case, like you said, we've seen him do that many times before. So it'd be different if it was somebody we hadn't seen do something like that. When we already know what Damon is capable of, I'm fine with him cutting away. That doesn't bother me one bit.
Yeah.
I think it was also for the character, because he's been here at Harrenhal. He's changed in a lot of ways since last season. And I think even the look on his face when he's tasked with doing it, like, you know, he'd kind of brought that guy under his protection, and he was the only one really bowing down to his, you know, false sense of kingship, and, you know, like maybe his most loyal servant. And so, not that he was overly emotional about it, but, you know, there are going to be consequences even for princes. And I think that's what was so great about it.
I think one of the interesting things about that scene, too, is that right after that cut, it cuts to him back in Dreamland again.
Mm-hmm.
It goes directly from that head cut back to him wandering around and seeing Leprosy of Viserys, which was creepy as hell.
Do you still want it? Do you want it still?
Man, that was I love that scene too.
Well, that's
I just love those weird wandering around in his dreams things. I just love those. So
I'm glad that you love them. And you know what, Andy? I feel like I would actually appreciate, like, at the end, I like to rewatch the whole season. A couple months, I'll rewatch the whole season. And I feel like I might like it more, though. I was happy that in the last couple episodes, things are progressing in the kind of the politics, right? The houses of Daemon being there. So he isn't just wandering around Harrenhal. Things are happening, and this was a happening. And for me, it was interesting because we've been talking about kind of the decimation of this character. And some people have been saying, and even I said last episode, well, he was one of my favorite. You just said it, Andy. He added so much of our humor. Now he's been, but this is what happened to him, right? Like they are accurately showing a person who is in flux and questioning his very core, but also at the same time being fucked with by magic and politics and other people, and having this young kid stand up to him, and for him to just kind of stand there with that blank stare while it's happening, you know, was interesting. And then when he beheads Willem, my name is William, so whenever someone, I like that name, Willem, though. I wish they would have shown more of this, because I do think, even as a person who is really into this world and understands the houses and remembers, okay, this, they fucked up House Bracken, blah, blah, the Blackwoods, the Brackens. I just felt it was a little bit referring to a lot of stuff off screen, you know? So it was a bit to get for me to really understand the import of Daemon then beheading his own henchmen. And what it means, what do you guys think it means? Because then we have the vision with Viserys. Is Daemon now having to actually rule in some way, walking around telling everyone not to call him king consort, but king? Does he really want it, or is he questioning it?
So I almost feel that we see Oscar Tully, who is basically a child, come into a lordship position and rule with more authority and wisdom and decidedness than we've ever seen from anything Daemon's ever done. And, you know, he did like a Ned Stark thing. Our way is the old way. You pay for this with your head. And that's justice. And the kid was very logical in spelling things out for his liege lords, for Daemon, and everyone else. And I don't think Daemon has it in him to ever think that calmly and rationally and justly. He's all been about partying and violence and war and trickery, and that's why he was never given the crown in the first place. That's why he was unseated from the heir. And so
we got to remember that.
I think the scene with Viserys at the end of that is kind of like, do you see now why you should not be king, why you do not have it in you to lead? Because he was just schooled by a child in every single way possible when it comes to leading people. And not being just like some guy that goes in and kills babies and, you know, stirs up crap in the Riverlands to try and, you know, wiggle his dragon around, so to speak. So, you know, I'm hoping that that's kind of part of it. And I also kind of feel like we can compare Daemon's time in Harrenhal. He's kind of like, not that, you know, kind of like the decay of his soul and morality and wisdom and ego maybe is similar to the decay of Viserys' body last season. Oh,
I like that.
Hmm.
I like that.
That's interesting.
I just came up with that on the fly, just kind of as we talk, you know? Like, it's just kind of stuff you think about as you put pieces together. Yeah. But, you know, there's something there. But, yeah, totally. I mean, Oscar Tully would be a better king than Daemon Targaryen.
Yeah, well, he's going to get a lot of acting roles, I'll tell you that. This kid is... HBO is looking for what video game he needs to star in. that was good stuff. Oh, what's
some
up?
Some of that stuff too. I mean, part of what I hoped when you were talking about that, Gina, it made me think, I'm hoping that the whole thing at, you know, Daemon at Harrenhal is basically how Daemon realizes he shouldn't be the king, and he should, like what you were saying, where Viserys is saying, are you sure you really want this? And I'm hoping that's what all this point of this is to him to come to realize that he needs to go back and help and not quest for the king. Cause he doesn't, he wouldn't be good at it. And he doesn't want it anyways, even though he thinks he does, just because of the way he was raised.
Totally.
That's what I hope the end result of the dream sequences is.
And also, guess what? He doesn't have the support, because he was trying to maneuver this that they would he'd somehow trick them to put their oath to him as king.
Yep.
And little Oscar makes it very, very certain that he is putting it in Rhaenyra, right? Yep. Not you. And you as king consort. That's what you have it in the notes there. Gina. So that was plainly stated. You're not tricking us into, you're not the king here, buddy. We're pledging to Rhaenyra.
Yes.
Okay. So he doesn't have his own little army to play with, or I think he was, maybe that was part of the freaking Weirwood acid trip, right? That it was tricking him into thinking that too, like you were talking about, Gina.
Yeah, and I still think I still think Laris could have somehow been behind that, because, you know, Simon's been pretty neutral the whole time, but when Tully was like, take his head, Simon's like, oh crap. I don't know if he would have been in on the ploy to kind of keep Daemon there and let him feel like he's king for a fortnight, but you know, he kind of seemed to think this might, you know, this crap's going to go down. And but I don't know.
Did you all ever see the English show where they buy a French chateau and then the guy and his wife renovate it and turn it into a wedding thing? It's an amazing show. I think it's called We Bought a Castle or something. And I would love to see Simon, if they just did a spinoff where they're just rehabbing Harrenhal and he's kind of hanging out, you know, Daemon and all the dragons can leave. I just want to see him more like a fixer upper, you know what I mean? But it's with him, that would be great. That's a great show, by the way. I can't remember the name of it. I think, is it We Bought a Castle? I can't remember what it was, but it's this older English guy and his wife is very theatrical, and she was in theater, and she is amazing designer, and each room is a crazy different. It's fantastic, but I'll figure out what the name of that is. But I you know what? After talking about it, it makes me more positive about this stuff. And I like that Andy liked it, and we'll see. I mean, hey, we got the finale coming. And it seems like things are coming towards Harrenhal. Who knows? In other news, we do have Daemon's daughter just saying, hey, have fun over there in Essos, kids.
I know.
I'm peacing out over here.
Hi, little princess. Right? It's time for me to go find a dragon.
Literally, she couldn't even wait till mother closed the door. And she was like, I'm out. And she ran away and try to find that dragon. I know we didn't see it, but I thought that was a fun little scene. And maybe I still hope, I don't know, for some reason, I think it would be kind of fun to see father and daughter kind of team up, if she gets on that dragon. But that was a fun little scene.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was
fun. And, you know, I almost thought it might have been her at the end of the episode when a dragon is spotted over King's Landing. But I think we're going to get to see her full claiming. I think we're going to get to see the full claiming of her dragon. And I think it's really important that we do, because we hear how she's tried to claim various dragons so many times and failed and nearly gotten killed every single time. So I'm excited for next week, because I'm 98.5% sure we're going to see her claim her dragon.
That's good. Agreed. And then we got to see what happens after that.
It's going to be a huge spoiler for everyone involved, because this is a dragon that apparently no one knows about except for the people that live in the Eyrie that have seen it like coming and burning their livestock. Like, how they do not let that info get out is, you know, kind of next level Aaron Lady weird. So I guess it's not that surprising, but it's weird.
Yeah.
Don't tell anybody we have a dragon.
Just a dragon, everyone. Keep going. Nothing to see here. All right, what else we got?
Let's talk about the other. Oh. Let's talk about the other really great child acting performance. And this was on this guy's a psychopath kid. What's his name?
Jace. Oh, Jace, yes. D. Vance.
And the mongrel, right. And I couldn't. That was bordering on Joffrey territory there.
Yes, I guess we should get into the whole thing, because you talked about it before, Andy, where you were talking about family not being blood, right? Like welcoming other people, and what this meant to Rhaenyra. And how I think as we're seeing it take place, the name of this episode is The Red Sowing, and they're dragon seeds, right? Mm-hmm. So that's where the title comes. It took me a second to get that. But the way it's presented at certain points during this episode, I thought was really fascinating, from the idea that they're claiming a birthright, right? That it's in their blood, to the idea that Rhaenyra is knowingly doesn't tell, like, she's like, I don't have much else to tell you, I'm out, but BTW, you're probably all going to get burnt to a fucking crisp. That point of her kind of using her power to murder like these small folk, just in the hope that she can get two dragon riders. Why? So she can be queen. You know what I'm saying? To then having to defend it to Jace, who sees it as a mirror to his own bastardness. Why am I special now? I'm a bastard just like them, right? But then in a sense, she's like, well, but I'm elevating that now. And I'm saying that it's about who you are, right? Or what you can do. But really, it's still about your blood. I don't know. I found the whole thing fascinating. I don't know whether he's going to stay in that place. That's what I'm interested in seeing, because that can be an initial reaction that may have. And though I do think that Bubba and Catfish, you got to listen to our friends over there at the Joffrey of Podcast, call him Jace D. Vance. He hates the little people. What is he going to stay there? Or is that an emotional reaction to his mother? He says, you let him in your bed, right? Like, I'm not ready to pass judgment on Jace just yet. I want to see what his actions are after this little outburst. But I don't know. How did you feel about it, Andy?
I don't know. I have a feeling it wasn't just an emotional reaction. It seemed like it was a lot more primal and like that he's wired that way. I could see him going and joining the other side, or leaving and doing something else. Something about that, and a part of it might have just been acting performance. I thought he was equally fantastic performance, and in the way that makes me instantly hate him. I don't, I don't, I just don't have a good feeling that he's not. I don't think he's going to do something heroic to that side. I should say maybe the, not heroic isn't the right word, but I could see him turning for sure.
Ooh.
Or trying to go do his own thing.
Ooh. Hmm.
Gina, what say you?
I think he's just a teenage boy. Like, I think she's raised him better than for him to truly turn against them. You know, he's not like an Aemond or an Aegon that didn't get enough love, that was, you know, were bullied. I can never see him siding and going, "Hey, cousin Aemond, thanks for killing my brother. I'm going to join your cause now." I can never see that happening. Especially since Aemond, I think, was one of the bigger shitsters when it came to teasing those guys about their legitimacy.
Yep.
Honestly, you know, they came out of Rhaenyra. We 100% know they're Targaryens without them having to have blonde hair. It shouldn't be that much of an issue. It would have been far more suspicious had Alicent given birth to dark-haired children, right? Because you think, well, my kids, you know, it's a whole Targaryen thing. It's stupid, really. It's all stupid. But I think the kid has always felt, I don't know. I mean,
slighted.
Well,
I think he's always felt slighted, but you know what? Rhaenyra's always been slighted.
Yeah.
Too, in terms of her place and her legitimacy as queen. And that has nothing to do with her birth. It just has to do with her being a woman. So I don't think she feels that sorry for Jace. And you know what? She could sit him down and say, listen, this is what happened. I was being forced to marry
anyone. But she should say that, Gina. That would mean
people would actually have to sit down and have a conversation with each other.
Yeah,
how hard that is for these characters.
Everyone.
But this is
I settled on Laenor because I thought I was actually going to have bastard children with a different guy. No, you know, and we tried, but he liked men. Like, just lay it all out for the kid. Listen, and I still deserve love and sex and everything else. And so I took it. From a good man who is your biological father. And I'm sorry if that upsets you, but you know, anyone else I would have married that wasn't a Targaryen, you still might not have had blonde hair. Yeah. So just get over it.
You know, I would love if that happened. Unfortunately, I think like a lot of times in this show and in House and in Game of Thrones, that conversation might be had, but it might be too late until like kind of like when she went to go talk to Alicent, where she's like, if you would have done this months ago or days ago, you could have avoided all this mess. You wait until it's too late to actually do something. I like a lot of what you're saying too, but I guess I could also see maybe not a full turn, but maybe he tries to do something foolish or more than he should be doing in a reaction to this, and he ends up getting somebody hurt, whether it's himself or
someone else.
I think that's more likely.
I could see him doing something to try and prove himself and getting killed in the process, or like Bela getting killed in the process. Someone that else that he cares for, you know, I could see it going that way, but
My feeling is that this reminds me like the final episode of Game of Thrones, spoiler alert, where someone's like, we should let the small folk vote on who is the king, and they all laugh. We thought, and I can remember in the episode before the podcast, before that episode, we were like, maybe they'll talk about democracy, you know?
Right.
This is that case where she is willing to ride on a fucking dragon, have all these people burn up, fight a war to be the queen, but she can't say to her son, when he finally has the nerve, because it took nerve to say that to his mother. You allowed him into your bed, that thing, right? Especially in this world, to say, I allowed him into, I chose him because he was a good man. Exactly what you said, Gina. Yeah. Like, understand my, like, this is reality, motherfucking kid who wants to ride a dragon and probably will, and your brother already died. So that does kind of bother me, but that's this world, right?
Yeah.
It's well, also a TV show, but.
He does ride a dragon. He has a dragon.
No, no, but I mean, I'm saying that it's just like, I don't know. You know, you'll do such extreme things except talk about your feelings and the truth.
Yeah.
You know, that's just my point, is that you'll go like go to war and you'll face all this death and destruction and magic and dragons, but you can't say to your son, the truth is I was forced into this, and this, I actually made a good choice for you. And by the way, motherfucker, they murdered your dad. Right. You know what I'm saying? In a fire. So let's bring it back home to the reality of it. But that's why I give it time. And in that case, when this happened, I kind of was a little bit on Jace's side when this happened, because I just felt like he was a young kid trying to grow up, express himself to his mom, understand what's happening when they are in the midst of war. And he is a dragon rider. Like he holds a powerful position here. But I still like I still like calling him J. Steve Vance, though.
Yeah. I do take issue with, like, of course, we know there's a risk when you try and claim a dragon, but that's even true of Targaryens. I mean, full-blooded, whatever Targaryens. She's pretty honest with them from the beginning. And she goes, this will be life-changing one. You know, maybe some of you crave this, and maybe some of you actually do crave death, you know, because they're in a bad way, right? A lot of those small folk who are Targaryens. And so I don't feel like she like brought them all there to be slaughtered. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think it's a really interesting comparison to make where we see bastards hunted down and murdered in Game of Thrones, all of Robert Baratheon's bastards.
Nice.
Yes.
And here we have her welcoming with open arms people that are, you know, cousins of mine that I've never met and never really knew existed. And I'm inviting them to, you know, it's kind of like Charlie in the Chocolate Factory, you know, are you worthy of the golden ticket? Like, I have two people will win dragons. It's like, you know.
So Rhaenyra will be played by Gene Wilder next season then.
Oh, yeah. Something
definitely
like that.
Not Johnny Depp.
Yeah. No, not Johnny.
No.
Yeah. No, I can see your point. I can see your point there. And they would have to be fools to not know that they're going to stand in front of a dragon. They live in this world, right?
Right.
They know that opportunity. I actually thought it was kind of funny when the dragon herders, or I don't know what their official, I don't know if they're maesters in some way, the handlers.
The order, I think they're called the Order of the Dragon.
Okay.
Is that who confronted? I was going to ask you guys, came out and confronted Rhaenyra?
Yep.
Was that okay? That was the dragon people.
Yeah.
And
remember, they already had two or more of their guys die last episode.
Yeah.
So this was not just a reaction to the small folk thing. I think it was also a reaction to, you fucking know what's going to happen. Like,
we're going to lose more people.
Yeah. And we're going to be the ones standing there with the sticks for some reason, right next to them. You know, and they were right, though, weren't they? They were right. Mm-hmm. They would have been dead. Any of them that had went out there with them and had tried to say, you know, heed or listen, follow, obey, they would have gotten burned up.
Mm-hmm.
So they actually made the right choice.
Yeah.
I wrote it down. Just because we're talking about this right now, I did. There was one I loved. It was a line that Rhaenyra had when she was talking to Missara about the rounding up all the bastards, and she just goes, "Let's raise an army of bastards." Somehow, that was like a fist pump. Like, yes, I just thought it was a great line. I just wanted to bring it up quick. I didn't really have anything else to add about it, but it was great.
Well, we all love that, you know, the all the misfits, the island of misfit toys, right?
Exactly, like, right.
They all get together and I did feel that too in watching it. And the idea, and in what Jace is saying, and the dragon, the Order of the Dragon people, that has been something that we've debated in Game of Thrones. They talked about it in this show too. You see what happened in King's Landing with the small folk. The idea of what makes someone a dragon rider, and trying to, you know, legitimize these bastards. I think it's interesting, but let's all also put it into perspective. This is all in the name of war, right? I don't exactly think, you know, and as we see how it ends, heal, motherfucker, heal. Wow. And her standing there like, rah, with the three dragons, which was an amazing shot.
Yeah.
It is. That's what it's about. It's about power. I feel the same way I felt a bit about Dany when people were like, Dany is the mother of dragons. Like, well, you know, like I have a son and I'm not like, you know, getting him ready to battle and sending him out to kill motherfuckers. But it's different because they're dragons. That's what they do. Yeah. Right. And as we see, they ended up choosing their riders anyway, didn't they?
Yeah. Yeah, they did. I'm going to backtrack a little bit to Adam and Sea Smoke and that scene on the beach where the dragons are kind of talking, but like the facial expressions from each of them are it was like the dragons were talking through the humans' facial expressions. But Adam would just like bent the knee right away. And she's like, what is your parentage? And he totally covered for Corlys.
Yeah.
Like, and my father is of no consequence or whatever, but, you know, and it makes me wonder if Corlys is going to fess up, like, you know, these two guys are my sons and I'd like to make them legitimate so one could be my heir at, you know, Driftmark, and, you know, my other kid can, you know, kind of get the full benefits of being a dragon rider. And,
I think so.
I think he'll do that. And, you know, I'm kind of going back to Jace. Is it weird to think maybe that Ulf and Hugh could, like, they could bond with that kid? Like, you know, they're all kind of bastards and coming into this. And like, I don't know if Jace would give them the time of day, but especially after Hugh's little speech about being ashamed of his mother. And we have to say that his mother is a Targaryen princess that was cast aside and then went to work in the pleasure houses.
This came back to me as he's telling the story. I was like, wait a second. That was that king's daughter who was really wild and free. And she ended up like, it was an analogy to who did this in the English monarchy. Remember, there was someone who said, I don't want to be. That's why Queen Elizabeth became the queen, right? Wasn't it? I can't
her
remember.
Uncle
Edward, was it, or something? I don't remember all their fucking names.
He married God, her name was
For Love.
Watson, someone.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Married. He for said, love, "I want to. Yeah. I fuck this. I'm marrying for love." Like it was. That's who she was.
Yeah. Right?
She didn't. So that was a great when he started telling. I was like, "Oh shit, Hugh is. That's what it is. It comes from his mom." But that's interesting too, because even in the case of Adam and Alan, they're Corlys says to him, I don't know the lineage. I don't know much about your mother, but my people were never dragon riders. We're from Valyria, but we were of the sea.
Yeah.
But we've seen that his daughter was a dragon rider, right? So
so was her mother. He married.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah. Good point. Thank you,
Jim. So it comes through the women.
So maybe it is from their mother. Maybe Adam and Alan are not from Corliss. That's just happens to be that he ended up having an affair with a woman who was somehow Targaryen or not, or of Valyria.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought from that, is that the mother was
That was interesting, which is another, the male-female, which this show is all about, right? Mm-hmm. And as we were talking about, I always think someone asked me, what's up with the hair color in Game of Thrones, right? And it's like, well, generally speaking, because this is a male-dominated world, you usually have the hair color of your dad, right? Like, it's like the same thing that happened with them. Like, Rhaenyra has the Targaryen hair, but her husband didn't, but her kids did. But then Alicent has darker hair, has dark hair, or she's kind of redheaded, you know? So I just think that it's, when you start breaking it down,
that maybe it comes down through the father.
Yeah, but just because of the, I mean, it's written, you know? So it shows. Well, and
that's how it was with the Lannisters and the Baratheons. Yeah, so we did that little study. I'm thinking of, like, my dad didn't really have red hair, but I think his dad kind of had strawberry blondish hair. So I think I could even skip a generation.
Well, yeah, and that's true, because a lot of times when you have red hair and someone has blonde hair, they have, like, my mom had blonde hair and my dad had red hair. I have red hair. Usually blonde gives way, but if you like, my wife has, I have red hair. My wife is a brunette. Our son has more brown hair. But I don't know the genetics of it.
You get a grandkid that's a redhead.
There's somebody listening to us who's like, you are all idiots. It has to do with this gene.
there's probably more than one somebody. So we're okay.
Yeah. Okay. But what I meant to say is, I always felt that was a writing technique, right? To show the fan, because there's so many families that, since in this world it passes down through the male, right? The male heir. That's why all the time that's the color hair they have. It's just a way for George to more easily. And that reminds us of, like, in the first season when Tyrion and Jaime and Cersei had really blonde hair, and then all of a sudden they didn't, because they were trying to make an analogy towards the Targaryens. But I think also they may have, in the beginning, I always thought, and I never read anything clarifying this, but I always thought that they did that because they were keeping it in their pocket to one day say that they were Targaryens, because of the rumors that their mother was raped by the Mad King, right? I always thought that that's one of the reasons they did that, to kind of keep it in their pocket. So in a later season, because everyone always remember that scene when Tyrion approaches the dragon?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He could have been a dragon rider. From what we've seen, he could have been a dragon rider.
Yes. Oh, yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I kind of thought, I mean, he used to dream about dragons, which is a whole thing, and with them. And
so interesting.
I actually always thought he had some Targaryen in him, for sure.
Are any of us disappointed at all that it was so obvious that Hugh and what's the other cat's name?
Ulf.
That Hugh and Ulf were dragon. Like, it was like when Ulf fell down, my wife was like, hey, what happened to our dragon guy? Like, before he even got on the dragon.
I loved how he was in the bar, and he finds out about this call for Targaryen bastards, and he gets really scared. He goes, oh, I would if it wasn't for my injury. And they're like, what? And he's like, well, what if it's not true? What if it's just a story? You know, what if it's just a story? Like, he kind of backpedals. I thought that was quite endearing for someone that had such
bravado.
Oh my God. That's what happens when you're talking Game of Thrones. Had such bravado, and I was worried for him for a while. I'm like, maybe it's not going to be Ulf. Like, maybe we're going to get to see him fry like a crispy critter. except when he grabbed that torch off the wall, I was like, oh, dude, you don't even know what you're going to run into. And I was pretty sure it was going to, he was going to be the second one for sure. But, and it was great.
He even, to me, oh, I'm sorry, Andy, I keep on talking. What do you have to say about this, Andy?
Oh, no, I thought it was predictable, but I don't think that, I'm not saying that in a bad way. I was just fine because to me, it seemed like logical. That's who was going to be the writers. So I enjoyed it. And the stuff with Ulf was, I really liked him, or Ulf, or however you pronounce his name, because I can't really think of a character that's quite like this in Game of Thrones or this show with the comedy. And it's like, okay, let's put Andy Dwyer from Parks and Recreation on a dragon.
Yeah.
Because that's what it felt. And I loved it. I was like, wow, this is really funny and awkward. And he struggles to fly the thing and in a funny, endearing way. I thought it was great. I loved the addition of that character.
Yeah. Yeah. It didn't bother me.
As a dragon rider, I should say.
Yeah. It didn't bother me at all, you know? It's okay. We knew it, right? And that's okay. Yeah. We got to learn about them. And in a way, too, we got to learn about the small folk. We also got to learn about how Rhaenyra and Missaria spread the word, right? And that was the girl that, if I'm correct, that was the girl that Aegon raped, wasn't it?
Oh.
I think she was the handmaiden from last year that Aegon raped and Alicent made her drink the morning after.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe. I feel like I remember her looking different from that, but it could be.
Either way, I felt it was good that they were able to weave different stories and plot lines into this. And it came out fantastic. I thought the whole thing with Hugh was fucking awesome, where he's kind of like, first he's going to save the girl, then she gets fried, and then he's just kind of like, fuck this shit. Like, what am I here for? Right? Yeah. And he just stands up to the dragon. I loved it. And with the Ulf stuff, it was so, he stepped on a dragon egg, right? Like, you think you're dead. Like, I thought he was going to be dead.
Yeah.
But no, the dragon still sniffs his balls and then is like, ride me, big boy. You know, it was it was funny. I just really loved all of this. I thought it was perfectly done. I thought the way that when Rhaenyra gave her little speech and then she's kind of quickly getting the fuck out of there and she looks at Missaria, she's like, go, 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 right? Like, get behind the fucking thing, quick. I thought that was so funny. It was one of my favorite things I've watched on TV this year. I thought it was a perfect end to all this story and this buildup and how are they going to do it. We saw it last episode. I thought it was great. I have absolutely no complaints. And I love both of them. Hugh Studley. I mean, come on, that guy is the man. And Ulf too. Like you said, Andy, he doesn't seek power.
Yeah.
Everyone on this show seeks power. He just sought some free drinks at the tavern.
Yeah.
Was there people that didn't like that are complaining about that?
I don't think
that
so.
It was predictable? Oh, nothing okay, else. Good.
No, I was just wondering because I was thinking if this was a 24-episode series, we would have had like three other people who die as soon as they get there. You know what I mean? Like we grew up with kind of stories. So the fact that they just dispensed with the bullshit and showed us who the dragon riders were from the beginning was, I liked that. I thought it was good.
Yeah. Because I think at first people are like, why are we focusing on these guys? You know, if you didn't know about the other dragons, like if you were someone that hadn't read the books or anything, and then it kind of becomes clear when they're like, oh, there are two other dragons under there. Oh, I personally really liked it once Vermithor chose Q and he kind of looks up at Rhaenyra and they both give this sly little like, yeah, we're badass dragon riders smile to each other. I thought that was great. I was like, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, before you mentioned something for just a brief second, I want to back up for just a second. And maybe you two can't answer this question because I have not read the book, so I have no idea. And it might just be me reading way too much into things. But when Massara sends the message out to spread the word about the dragon riders and all that stuff, and the one that you said that wasn't he, the woman that you referred to, the possibly getting raped, if we weren't sure if that was the same, that woman that walks out, is there any significance to her in the red dress and this episode being titled The Red Sewing? And it gave me vibes of the red witch kind of thing. Is that in play?
I don't think she's a red witch, but I think that there was a definite color coordination with the themes and what was
The title of the episode, I took that's what that meant, was that was what the red sewing was. But something about the red thing just stuck out to me. Maybe it's just because I keep expecting Melisandre to show up at some point or hoping that's going to happen. I have no idea if it does, but I always hope that since the beginning of the show, because I loved her character. But anyway, sorry. Maybe you guys can't answer this.
I was actually thinking it was a really bad play on the Red Wedding, which I think is lame, but I think it's more in line with that.
Oh, because
this was nothing compared to the Red Wedding. It was more, I felt more elated after it than the Red Wedding. That's for sure.
Yeah. Well,
not because of all the death, but because of the dragon.
My son. Right? Yeah. No, I can't. Oh, God.
So I guess finally, should we talk about the very end? So early on in the episode, some guy is telling Laris, hey, I heard a rumor that Sea Smoke has a rider. And Laris is like, well, I'm the master whisperer. So where did you hear this woman? It's like, well, they told one friend, and then I heard from this guy, and then I heard from this guy, and then I heard from that guy. And Laris is like, tisk, tisk, tisk. Like, I don't think we should bring this up. Sounds like poppycock to me. And then they're at that council meeting, and someone's like, dragon! The look on Aemon's face, and then the look those two exchange that decided not to tell Aemon about the rumor Sea Smoke had a rider. You know they thought it was Sea Smoke. And yet it was an entirely different dragon. And I just can't wait till next week until they're like, oh yeah, we heard Sea Smoke has a rider too. And Aemon being like, what?
Yeah, that was that confused me a little bit.
Go ahead. Oh, I was going to say, that guy that was talking to Laris, his name was Ironrod. I happen to have the captions on. And that's it. I kind of took it that Bubba and Catfish briefly talked about this. I kind of thought that Laris was intentionally holding that back.
That's what I thought.
He should tell him.
Thank you.
Because wasn't it just last episode where he said he wants to help the king who's beat up and he wants to help the fellow. And I kind of took it that he was doing that on purpose to try and help sink Prince Aemon. But
and we see the scene with him and Aegon, right?
Mm-hmm.
So which was touching and creepy and weird at the same time, but as everything is with Laris.
That's what I was going to say. Everything with Laris, yes.
Made my
creepy, weird,
not totally
intriguing. Everything he does is creepy.
Yeah,
that's true. That's a good
song. Should definitely be a police song written about him for sure.
What was I? Now I'm trying to think of more lyrics for that song. Jeannie got me going. I'm like in a weird
every
owl
breath you
mode.
Take could work for him too.
That's true.
And with this creepy watching,
every step you take,
he has to be a big Sting fan.
Yes. What was I going to say? Yes, I thought that he was purposefully withholding that information. He was like mocking that guy when he probably knows that he's heard some rumors that are from a person, right? But it's up for it. Mm-hmm. There's verification, right? Trust, but verify. So,
and I guess the way that he talked to him too, he's like, well, I guess if you want to tell him, it's your prerogative, but I wouldn't really do it. And I'm like, it's almost like you're daring him to not do it.
That's like something I would say my sister. Well, if you want to tell mom, you can, but you know,
like that reverse psychology type thing. Yeah.
So I saw it, but you're right. The look though, I think it superseded any of that, right? Like,
because there's still a giant dragon coming.
Yes, exactly. But so that's why I was a little, I didn't know if I understood that completely. I'm perhaps I still don't until we see what happens of it. But yeah, that scene was amazing because that just came out of nowhere, right? Like, I love when they do shit like that. It makes you feel, gosh, I felt like it was like, you know, I don't know. It was like Biden stepped down or something. Like, what? What? Right? Like, it was like the shock of a news. Something happened. What happened? Like, and then I was like, I'm watching the show. I was like, what happened? What's that? I was like, oh, God, it's a dragon. And then for it to be Ulf driving around and like kind of doing the How to Train Your Dragon routine.
I was going
to
say drunk dragon driving.
Yeah.
It was kind of like,
there was a like a contradiction in it, right? They're so scared. Aemond is immediately activated and goes out. And I love that, how he just like, I'm getting on my horse. And then he's like, let's go, dragon. That was awesome, the way they shot that. Mm-hmm. But meanwhile, it's some doofus on the dragon.
I know.
That's why I call him Andy Dwyer, because that's the first thing I think of. It's like, that's how he would be riding that. That's
hilarious.
Thing. Yeah.
It was like, they're so upset. But this guy doesn't even know how to control the dragon. But to me, you know what that said to me? Which is what this episode made me feel like, and we've talked about this theme in the show before, that this is the dance of dragons. This is not the dance of humans. The dragons are in control. And it's not that the humans now have dragons, it's that the dragons now have humans, right? And that's what I find interesting, like how they control all the rules that they think they have, where they're like, you have to have this blood or this thing or that, this or that, this. It kind of comes down. They don't know. There's no answer.
In the grand scheme of things, most of those things are meaningless.
They don't know. They have no idea. So, and in the end, the dragon picked them. So, I mean, yes, they did bring them there. There was like partially of that idea, but you just don't even know. Like we said, with, they showed with Tyrion, and that's kind of consistent for the books too, right? Like they don't, there's ideas and there's histories and there's things that they may have heard of or a myth or something, but when it comes down to it, the things that are really in control are the dragons.
Yeah. Oh. Interesting.
Every step you take.
It's fun.
Yes. Yes.
Take those shoes
Every
off.
Limp you make.
Yeah, exactly. See, you're not gonna get it out of your head now. You're just gonna think about
stop. I can't stop. Yeah. What else did
Don't stand so close to me. I mean, there's a million of them.
Well, how about the classic Miss Gradingo? That's one of my favorite of all-time police songs. Let's see. I'm trying to look through the notes. Is there anything else?
You know, there was one other scene I really loved that didn't really advance a whole lot of stuff. But when Corlys goes to talk to Adam for the first time, and Adam asks for the leave from his other job, and he's like, "Your leave is granted." And he walks out and just says, "Well done."
Yeah.
And that was just that well done, man, that just that simple line delivery was so awesome. I love that interaction between those two. I hope we get to see more of him and the two kids
and admitting that he's his father.
Yeah.
Right. Like that's a huge deal. I like that story. I really
I do too.
I like it a lot. I like the actors. I like the way they've developed it. I like the way it comes off of what happened to Renice and all that kind of stuff is really,
all of the Corlys stuff. I'm liking Corlys much more this season. I'm not sure why. It seemed like he was underused a little bit, even though he was in a lot of it last year. They didn't give him I really
he disappeared. Remember? He disappeared for a long time. And how about when Dickhead is like complaining before the council meeting and Corlys is like, how about we fucking wait for the queen to come and tell us?
Yeah.
Okay, dude.
Sometimes it seems like he's the only adult in the room, which maybe that's part of why I like it.
He was a good choice.
You know, speaking of people that haven't been around, do you guys think we're going to see Otto come back this next episode? I'm missing Otto because he's one of the characters I also love. And we haven't seen him since what, episode 2 or 3?
Yeah.
I don't know that we're going to get him this season.
That disappoints me, Gina.
I think when we see him, we're going to meet Daron at the same time. Kid. And we hear now that Daron's dragon is large enough to ride.
Yes.
Daron's 16. So I imagine it's going to be kind of a tinier dragon, kind of like Luke's was.
Okay, so then I'm going to temper my expectations. Maybe we won't see him, because I've been like, God, I hope we see it. So,
I don't know. You guys don't watch the Nexon, do you?
No.
I did see it this week. I don't normally, but I did see it this week. But I didn't understand what I was watching, so.
I guess, I think there is another dragon on Team Green and Dragon Rider that we haven't considered, and it was kind of teased.
Interesting.
And I'll be honest, it has me extremely worried.
Really?
Not necessarily.
That's a hell of a tease.
Yeah, it has me extremely worried.
Worried why, Gina? Just storytelling wise, or
for someone else?
For one of the characters.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool.
Okay.
Not storytelling wise.
Okay, that's a good tease. I like that.
Well, I mean, I don't think it's going to disrupt the story. If anything, it's going to make it
accelerate in
more
some
tragic.
Oh, mm-hmm. Well, that's what we're all waiting for, I guess, right? Like, I mean, if these were filler episodes, I guess a death fills that void, but I loved it. I thought this, and just as we've been talking for an hour and 15 minutes about this episode, there was so much in it, so much of it I loved. I want to go back and watch that Red Sewing again, and there was just something so triumphant with Hugh when he just stood up to that dragon.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That was like an Avengers.
It reminded me of a superhero type moment.
Yeah, like I said
Tony Stark putting his armor on or something like that. Exactly. There was a lot of fist pump moments in this episode, which normally I don't associate with Game of Thrones. So that probably means something terrible is going to happen in the next episode.
Oh, hey, I have a question for you all, because you did mention our friends Bub and Catfish, and we listened to their episode this week. And I listened to Matt's great, both his musical analysis and his initial reaction. But I think Catfish had the idea and asked a question, and then I thought this too, owing to where she was and her reaction. Was it that Ulf just kind of didn't know what the fuck was going on and the dragon ended up riding around King's Landing? Or did somehow Rhaenyra say to him, like, go ride over in King's Landing and see what the fuck happens?
Oh, yeah, as an order.
I thought it was just by accident.
That's what I thought, but I like the idea that she would have done that. But it seemed to me like that was just accident that he was flying around there and that happened to be where he was.
Yeah, that's what I thought. What do you think, Gina?
I think it was kind of accidental. Like, you know, he busted out. He teamed that dragon. He busted out of the cave on its back and wanted to give a little buzz and fly by his friends, you know?
Like, maybe it's even like the thought came to him, so that's where the dragon went.
Probably. I did it.
But Rhaenyra was kind of, they were all, now, she was standing there with her dragon, and then was Hugh behind her? Or who were the other dragons that were there?
It was Hugh, and then it was Hugh with Vermithor, and then it was Silverwing that had just landed back.
Okay.
On Dragonstone. And so Sea Smoke was not in that array. So Aemon still doesn't know about Sea Smoke.
But that was a great shot. That was an amazing.
It was cool. I zoomed out and you see her first, and then you see the dragon. It was very cool.
And that was very Danny with the three baby hatchlings at the end of season one of Game of Thrones, right?
Yeah.
The kind of three colored her just like standing there. I love how they're doing some. It's not, I mean, I don't know how intentional, but there's so much kind of matching up with, you know, it's an army of bastards, you know, versus, you know, kind of killing them all because you're afraid they're going to usurp your throne. It's like inviting the bastards in to like help you win the throne. And
I think there's a lot of that. I think they.
Good.
Yeah, I think they do that a lot, and
it makes it more comfortable. Too. I think for watchers, you know, viewers.
Yeah. And that's part of world building, right? Because themes follow each other. Mm-hmm. And it just makes me, I was talking to Aaron yesterday, and he was like, they've got to do Aegon's conquest. They've got to do it. And I was like, they have to. That is, if the next one that they do, this was successful, I would love to see that. All these dragons make me think of that. Because you get more dragons, you get politics, you get history. It'd be awesome. But we got one more episode this season of this show.
One other neat little scene within a scene that I left here was just a small detail is when Ulf is going to meet with the dragon in the lair and everything, and he kind of steps down on top of the egg, and he's like, it drops into this weird goo. Like, is it a nest goo thing? Did you guys see that whole thing?
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. He stepped on a dragon egg.
Yeah, did he step on the egg itself? Yeah. Or was it like it was in some kind of weird membrane? I loved all that stuff. It reminded me of Alien, actually.
Yeah,
Alien,
it did. It was good.
I'd really love that. I mean,
the facehuggers.
Just another little cool thing that was in this episode I like to point out. But
didn't you think that, Gina? Didn't you think he stepped on a dragon egg?
Either that or it was like, flaming hot dragon poo.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, I know that you could see an egg that it was right next to where he stepped, but like there was... I don't know.
Oh, I understand what you mean, Andy. It was almost like a secretion that protects the eggs, and he broke through the secretion.
Yeah, like some kind of membrane or something. Yes. Yeah.
I see what you're saying. I could see that. I could see that.
Because it might be like a clutch of eggs. Remember when Damon retrieved a whole clutch, and I want to say it was like a big glob of them together. So yeah, it might've been, he stepped on the protective membrane. Yeah.
Well, cause I got the feeling the first time I watched him, like, did he just step on an egg? And I thought, I think that dragon might've been a little more pissed off if he had stepped and crushed an egg, but maybe the dragons don't care. I guess I don't know.
Well, that was what I was saying before. It was like, it didn't matter, right? Like when you find your rider or you find someone that can ride you and let you be a fucking dragon, you're like, fuck it.
Yeah.
I don't care. But I kind of remember maybe it wasn't a dragon egg, because if I remember correctly, they are very strong. They're not like eggs that you can crack open and have for breakfast.
Oh, yeah.
They're almost like metal.
Yeah.
Remember, those were petrified, but still.
I think they were pretty strong, because even when Damon got them, it wasn't like, they were like holding them in a sack. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They're pretty big.
They have to be for as long as Danny's eggs were around for. I mean, that's without hatching. They got to be pretty damn strong.
Well, it also shows, though, that at this time in this world right now, there's more dragon eggs there.
They're still reproducing. Yeah.
So that's interesting, we'll see. Anything else?
I have one other note, and it's not really it's just kind of a thing that they did in the show. I happened to watch I'm sure you watched this, Gina, if you saw the next time, but like during the little making of feature that they have, and they were talking about that opening scene with Rhaenyra and Adam on the beach, and they said that they modeled the dragons after The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, and Two Gunslingers were the dragons with the gunslingers.
Yeah.
I thought that was really a cool touch. I don't know. Just another cool. I love those small touches that they seem to be having a lot in this season. So I thought I saw another fun thing to point out.
Yeah,
not really a theory type thing, but just another cool thing, because I'm really in love with this show right now. So.
Who directed this episode? Because there was a lot of amazing shots in this episode. There really were. And that was that shot of them on the beach was
Lonnie Piristeri.
Interesting.
I don't know.
That's not I don't know how to pronounce it. Lorne? Yeah. Look, who is Lonnie Piristeri?
Lonnie.
Done some American Horror Story, Warrior.
Did visual effects shot design for Firefly and Battlestar Galactica. Yeah, directed Warrior, Banshee, American Horror Story. 9 episodes. The Witcher, 2 episodes. Okay.
Yeah. So
definitely in this world. Right? Yeah. Interesting. All right, Lonnie, we learn about it's always good to check that IMDb. Banshee is getting popular again because people who love The Boys want to go back and see what's that guy's name again? Anthony
Oh, Starr.
Anthony Starr, yeah.
You know, did I hear correctly too that when somebody was talking about, I think it was Rhaenyra talking about Vermithor, did she say he's the second largest dragon?
No. After
Aegon. Yeah, second largest. Yeah, the second largest.
Oh, yes. Yeah, second largest. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I've seen that on size charts for vet dragons.
So Hugh's got the second biggest dragon now.
And the name the Bronze Fury, I also thought was really awesome. His nickname that they said, it's like a pro wrestler nickname. I just thought that was cool too.
So. Are you kidding? How about the fucking way the dragons looked? They have really, they're so particular, little horns and shit. And you can see the bronze patch coming down like the nose, like almost like a horse kind of like, man, they did they did amazing work. Whoever the people in there doing those computer images, they know what the fuck they're doing because that looked amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. All right, Gina, anything else on your end?
No, I think we're good.
All right.
I think it was a great episode. I loved it. I can't wait for next week to see what happens.
Well, it's been a great season. It has been great talking to you every week, Gina. It has been great having so many amazing guests. Andy, thank you so much for taking the time, and we'll be talking again next week about Mayor of Kingstown, the finale there, and the finale of House of the Dragon, and as Gina well knows, the finale of Real Housewives of New Jersey, all on the same night.
What the fuck?
It's too much. No. And then we get no tea, and then the month of August, we get preseason football, some Olympics, and not much else, folks. But we'll try to find something to talk about. I'm sure we will. Maybe we should catch up on like some of the best shows of the year and, you know, see how our lists are coming through with that. That might be a fun thing to do as well.
That would be a fun.
Yeah.
Fun little show. The one we did last summer was fun when we did that.
Yeah, it was. That's right. We did a 6-month one. We did one in June.
Yeah.
We did a half year. We didn't do that this year. So we'll see. But thanks everyone for listening. Thanks, of course, Gina and Andy. Thanks everyone downloading the reviews, Patreon. Really fantastic. This is so fun to hang out with two friends and chat about this, and people get to listen as well. So check us out at dvrpodcast.com, patreon.com/DVR. And if Bill Cava sent you any weird messages on Facebook, it's not him. Peace out, everybody.